to be starting a new sermon series. It's about King David. Not sure how long this one's going to last because, you know, David lived a very rich, very full life. Like the Apostle Paul, he experienced some really high highs and some really low lows. But unlike the events in Paul's life, David's ups and downs directly affected the safety and the stability of an entire nation. He was a flawed hero, an Iron Age Batman without the privileged childhood to go with it. He was a common man, but he was anything but common. He loved deeply, he worked hard, and he fought harder. David was a guardian, a warrior poet. The term warrior poet first appears in ancient Irish folklore. It was used to describe the Fianna, the elite warrior heroes of Irish legend. These men were hard, resilient, and fierce on the outside. But on the inside, they were thoughtful. They were tender-hearted. They were lovers of wisdom. In modern times, a warrior poet has come to mean someone who fights for a greater good, a protector whose love for others has inspired them to train for war. But whichever definition we go with, the ancient or the modern one, David fits it perfectly. He was a man after God's own heart. He was Israel's greatest warrior. In a lot of ways, David is Israel. And what I mean by that is he was chosen by the God of the universe out of very humble, unassuming circumstances to be set apart for a special purpose. It's a purpose that would not be fulfilled until many years later. His life was one of extremes. Again, very high highs, very low lows. Success, failure, redemption, repeat was the cycle of his life. Men admired him, women adored him, his enemies feared him, and his people loved him. Did y'all know that the biblical writers devote more content to David than anyone else other than Jesus? And we know David wrote a bunch of songs, but did y'all know that folks wrote songs about David? In fact, there's a simple song that Jewish school children still learn today. It's called David, King of Israel. And that song dates back to the 2nd century, and they're still learning it and still singing it today. So not only did David's people love him, but they still love him. They never stopped loving him. History refers to the great city of Jerusalem, which is arguably the most prized and sacred city in the world, as the city of David. Messiah is referred to as the son of David. The star on Israel's modern flag is the Star of David. They loved him then, they loved him now. Why did they love him? Well, that's the question this sermon series is going to try to answer. What is it about this man that made him Israel's greatest king and a man after God's own heart? Well, I think the best place to start is just at the beginning. We first meet David in 1 Samuel 16. If y'all want to turn there, that's kind of where we're going to hang out today. 1 Samuel 16. At this point, David's most likely in his mid to late teens. There's really no information about his life up until this point, which is kind of strange because the Bible gives us a lot about the early years of people like Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses, even Jesus. We know more about his early childhood than we do David's. We don't know nothing about David's childhood. But when he shows up in the biblical story, he's already around the age of a high school junior. And Samuel, the great prophet, who was also Israel's last judge, he is waiting for him at the family homestead. Samuel's there with Jesse, David's dad, David's 7 older brothers, and maybe his 2 sisters. Now, David's mom could have been there too. We know from Psalm 86, which is one of David's songs, that his mother was a God-fearing woman. In verse 16, David prays that the Lord would turn to me and be gracious to me, give your strength to your servant, and save the son of your maidservant. And while the Bible doesn't name David's mama, according to Jewish tradition, her name is Netzavet, daughter of Adael. So we got mom and dad, we got seven brothers, we got at least two sisters, maybe more, but we know he's got at least two. That's a big family. That's a big family by any standard. It's a big family that David didn't always feel like he fit into. In Psalm 69, verse 8, David laments that he's become a stranger to my brothers and alien to my mother's sons. Plus, it seems like sometimes Mr. Jesse would just forget about his baby boy, just not even give him a thought. Back at the homestead, Samuel is waiting. He's been commissioned by the God of Israel to anoint Israel's next king. But the only intel that God provided Samuel was that the lucky fellow was going to be one of Jesse's sons. Samuel shows up and he's got seven. Okay. And in verse 10 of 1 Samuel 16, we read, Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. Verse 11, then Samuel said to Jesse, are all your sons here? And he said, well, there remains yet the youngest, but behold, he is keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, well, go get him, because none of y'all are eating until he gets here. It's kind of what he said. That's the mic IV. When Samuel told Jesse he wanted to meet his sons, either Jesse forgot about his youngest son, or he didn't believe David was worthy of the invitation. Not sure which one's worse, honestly. David loses either way. You know, it's funny to me how when you study people from different periods of history, you learn that people are just people. Always have been, I guess they always will be. What their lives look like from the outside may be vastly different, but if we can get a peek at what's going on in their minds and in their hearts, we realize they're just like us. They're just like us. They fear the same things. They want the same things. Sure, the packaging looks different, but deep down, we are all the same. Same struggles, same insecurities, same character flaws, same shallow thinking. But thankfully, our God does not share our shortcomings. He is not superficial. He is not short-sighted. You know, one reason Jesse may not have thought to include David was because David was small. He was a little guy. He was young. And in such a patriarchal culture, folks might have looked at David and saw potential, possibly. Like maybe he'll turn into something someday. But now he's just the runt of Jesse's litter. That's all he is. All he's good for is tending the sheep. But God didn't see things that way. Let's back up to verse 6 of 1 Samuel 16. It says, when they came, meaning Jesse's sons, when they came, Samuel looked at Eliab and thought, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. So even Samuel got caught up in it. Y'all see that? He just assumed it was this guy. And I think that's something we do instinctively. No, we're not trying to be that way. We just are. We're drawn to the beautiful and to the rich, folks with good hair and straight teeth. If they look the part, I guess we assume they can handle the part, right? Does that make sense? You know, I remember, I think it was 2008. When did John McCain run for president? Was it 2008? I think it was 2008. A guy I worked with, He loved to talk politics. I hate to talk politics. Great relationship. But I remember when McCain picked Sarah Palin as his vice president. I'd never heard of her. But this buddy of mine I worked with, he told me that now, because McCain had picked Palin, he was all in for McCain. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, tell me about her. I've never heard of her. What's she do? You know, what's she done? What kind of credentials does she have? And he said, oh, I don't know. I was like, well, why do you support her so much? He said, dude, she's hot. Okay. She's hot. That's why you give somebody the nuclear launch codes, right? Because they're hot. But that's essentially what Jesse and Samuel are doing. It's essentially the same thing. Eliab's probably tall, with broad shoulders, got a deep voice. He probably looks a lot like the current king Saul. And I just picture God up in heaven watching Samuel just drool all over this guy going, oh, geez. Samuel. Samuel, don't get caught up in the way he looks. That stuff's going to fade. I want somebody with a heart like mine. That's what God wanted. And that's what David was. He was someone with a heart like his. And y'all, I don't want to bang on Samuel and Jesse too hard because we do the same things. It's just a human issue is all that is. It was such a big deal, even in Paul's day, that Paul committed part of his letter to the church in Corinth to addressing this very thing. He says in chapter 1, starting in verse 26, "For consider your calling, brothers and sisters. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are." I love that. "So that no human being might boast in the presence of God." It's funny, you know, David, he comes in from the fields. He's dirty, probably smells really bad. And at the end of verse 12, God tells Samuel, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." And Samuel, give him credit. He doesn't question. He doesn't argue. He just gets up. He pours the oil over David's head, anointing him as Israel's next king. And frustratingly, there's no dialogue recorded in this text. Nothing. I'm like, well, what'd he say? He had to say something, right? His brothers had to say something. They're all probably standing there in a circle looking at him like, you got to be kidding me. David? I mean, did David turn to his dad and be like, how you like me now, dad, huh? King. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. We don't know what, if anything, was said, but I'm sure David didn't do that. Because really, he wouldn't be a man after God's own heart if he did that, right? I'd have done it. I'd have done it in a heartbeat. But what does the text say in verse 13? It says that the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. Which I guess that's more important than the details of a conversation. So David is God's man, and now he's Israel's king in waiting. So what does David do next? How does he celebrate? He goes back to the sheep. He goes back to the sheep. We see that a few verses down, which is just so awesome. Did any of y'all have those friends that like to say that if they ever inherited a lot of money or they won big in the lottery, that they continued to keep working their job? Y'all know any liars like that? I know a lot of them. And I'm like, bro, I've known you half your life. You would not, trust me. Well, David did that. David becomes king, and he goes back to tending his father's sheep. They weren't even his. They were his dad's sheep. David did that. So I think we can start to see why Israel loved him so much. David has been anointed king. That's kind of a big deal. But the writer doesn't feel compelled to share any words from David at all. It'll be several years later in David's life before we have any recorded words from him in the biblical text. You know, I would think that someone this important at such an important time in his life would be afforded some words on a page. But that's my problem, isn't it? That's what I think. That's what I want to see. Because that's how we do things now, right? There's usually a public statement. We expect responses and reactions from everybody who knows nothing about the situation. We want people's comments. We want people's opinions. But the writer of Samuel has the king-elect going back to his sheep without saying a word. And we don't hear from David until he shows up in Israel's war camp at the Valley of Elah in chapter 17. It's the first time we hear him utter any words. You know, David's life story is handled very differently than other Jewish kings. I'm not sure why. But the author of the Bible doesn't seem to be interested in just sharing information about a historical figure when it comes to David. David's story is told in a way that leaves out things that us modern folks would find interesting, and it includes a lot of material that actually makes David look really bad. Really bad. And I think it goes beyond the idea of God using flawed and broken people to do mighty things. Of course, that's very true. He does that. Praise Jesus, he's still doing that. But David's story with these humble beginnings and his faithfulness to the work he's been given, the way he's overlooked and he's practically shunned by those closest to him, it's almost like David's story is told in a way that's meant to change our expectations of what kingship looks like. That in God's economy, rulers and leaders should not be selected based on human standards or expectations. It's something deeper. It's something stronger. You know, David was easy to miss. He did not fit the king criteria. But moving forward, every king that rules over God's people would be compared to him. To him. Their level of success would be measured against his. The one the kingmakers would never choose became the one king that united the tribes and established the nation. That was David. In other words, God chose what was foolish in the world to shame the wise. He chose what was weak in the world to shame the strong. He chose what was low and despised in the world, even things that were not, to bring to nothing the things that are. So David is chosen to be king because of his heart. That's what God told Samuel in verse 7. He saw a heart that was completely his. Now, how does David develop a heart like that? Well, it doesn't look like he got it from Jesse. Maybe his mama. I mean, she was a God-fearing woman. And maybe that's how it started. Maybe she taught David when he was a wee lad how to pursue God with his heart and to pursue God with his mind. It could have been his mom who set him on that path to becoming the warrior poet that he was. But I think we all know, especially if we've been involved with church for a while, I think we all know that despite David's mom's best efforts, David would have had to cultivate his own relationship with God, right? David would have to form his own faith. He could not just rely on his mom's. Plus, his faith would need to grow and to evolve through learning and life experience, just like ours do. And maybe that's why David appeals to so many people, because he wasn't born into royalty or privilege. There was no grand celebration when Samuel ordained him king. No one who wasn't in that room even knew about it. Those formative years of David's life, they weren't spent studying with scholars like the Apostle Paul. David was a redneck. He spent long days baking under that hot Mediterranean sun, guarding and tending sheep, moving them over these unstable game trails through mountain gaps in and around Bethlehem, trying to find better grazing areas. Verse 12 tells us that David had a ruddy complexion, ruddy meaning reddish, but that's not genetic. David earned that from years spent outdoors, faithfully shepherding his father's sheep. David also fearlessly protected his flock against bears and mountain lions, against bandits, and just other really nasty people. He was an unassuming, simple man, faithful to the work his father gave him, faithful to his God. This is the story of Israel's warrior king. And it's also the story of heaven's high king, the king of kings. You see, I think David's story might be introduced the way it is because the author of the Bible is pointing to another story, a future story where another unexpected king comes into the world that was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. That's John 1. Jesus is the greater David. He's also Messiah, making him the son of David. He's the one David was referring to when he wrote Psalm 110, claiming in verse 1 that the Lord says to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool. All Bible roads lead to Jesus, especially David's. David is Jesus' physical ancestor, plus he's the origin of his royal pedigree, but David worships at the feet of Jesus. The house of David bows to Jesus. You know, David lived a lot of life, and as we go through this series, it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, to revisit these great old stories in 1 and 2 Samuel. All those really high highs, all those really low lows. It wasn't just Bathsheba. I know that's the one that gets all the attention, but David messed up a lot. But he always found his way back. And I'm hopeful that in David's story, we'll see parts of our own stories. I'm hopeful that when we're done, it might help us believe that we're also kings and queens, that we also can be people after God's own heart too. And we're going to get into that next week is when we're really going to start. We're going to start with when David meets Saul. That is a very toxic and dysfunctional relationship, so that ought to be fun digging into. So I hope y'all will be here for that one. I will pray for us. Father,